This is Dojo Live, Tech Without Borders, stories that bring us together. Hello and welcome to Dojo Live this Tuesday, January 30th, 2024. Yes, January is still going. It has felt like an eternal month. We've still got one more day to go. But thank you so much for joining us as we talk about loyalty programs in a post-COVID world. Here to help do that is our guest today, John Taylor Garner, founder and CEO of Odin.
Hi, Kim. Thanks for having me.
Hi, John. It's going to be a great conversation. We're really excited to learn more about loyalty programs here on Dojo Live, and particularly about how you at Odin are doing it. Here to help me also throughout this conversation is my co-host, America Guerrero.
Thank you, Kim. Ready. I'm ready. I'm ready for this conversation.
She's ready. We've all been kind of under the weather, so I'm glad to see that you're geared up and ready to go on me. So what we're going to talk about really is diving into how banks, airlines and hotels can, get this, fix loyalty programs in the wake of excess elite status, credit card perks, and outstanding loyalty points. So we're talking about post-COVID, we're talking about excess. But before we do that, JT, we'd really like to get to know you a bit better, your story, your passion, what led up to founding of Odin, please.
Yeah, happy to share. So in my previous life, I was a volatility trader. I ran the International Macro Cross Eyes of Volatility book at Merrill Lynch. I was there for about 6 years. It's a mouthful and a very fancy title. It basically just means I traded everything, is all it means. Whenever anyone did want to deal with something, they gave it to me. So I got very good at putting out fires and, you know, taking care of problems. But funnily enough, my dream was not always to work at a major bureaucratic enterprise like
funny.
Yes. I'm not sure if there really is anyone that has that dream. But I decided to leave at the end of 2018 to pursue my real passion in life, which is flying around the world for free on points and miles, which I think is a much better passion to have than sitting at a banking cubicle. I guess it was a trading desk, but you get the idea. And they're effectively the same. And so my first venture in the space was called Card Curator. It was a consumer-facing mobile app. You can think of it as a automated version of the Points Guy, if you know the Points Guy, which I think most people watching this probably do. Basically, what the app did is it helped users not only maximize their earnings of points and miles, so telling them which card to use for your purchase based on geolocation, through to how to achieve a goal. Do they want cash back, charitable giving, points and miles, first class ticket to Tokyo? Whatever that goal was, we helped them achieve that. We then also helped them, as soon as they got enough points and miles via either spend or new credit card sign-up bonuses, told them how to redeem for that, how to combine those points and miles to book that ticket, for example. This all worked great pre-COVID, which is kind of the topic of the show. However, post-COVID, it forced us, we had to shut down Card Curator as a result. The reason for that was this shift in loyalty pricing. So pre-COVID, loyalty pricing was static, it was fixed. There were these charts that were published on airline websites and hotel webpages that told you the cost of the hotel night or the flight, where you wanted to go for the dates. Like, it was published there and then. There was no like if, ands, or buts about it. It's like, if it's available, this is the cost. And that's the key thing. Is it available or not? That's what you had to find. In a post-COVID world, the availability is actually almost always there. So that is the benefit, but the cost is not the same. The cost isn't fixed. The cost is where we want it to be. As you can imagine, it's kind of ruined our Card Curator app because we were telling people how to redeem their points miles. This was based on knowing the cost. Like, we knew what the charts were.
And as one result, of the variables was already solved for you.
Exactly. And as a result, Card Curator became broken. So we made the hard decision to shut it down, and we started Odin as a result, so the same founding team, to actually solve for this very problem, to solve for this dynamic loyalty issue, because we knew it wasn't just a problem for credit card holders, end users like you, me, everyone here. It's also a problem for the airlines and hotels, which we'll talk about, and for their banking partners as well, and anyone else that's involved in that supply chain. So it has massive ramifications, and we happen to be in the right place at the right time, unfortunately for Card Curator, RIP, but we were able to take advantage of that opportunity.
That's interesting. You know, I didn't even know about that shift even happening in the industry. What caused this industry-wide shift? I mean, COVID, okay, but going from, am I here? Can you hear me? Okay, sorry, froze for a second. From static to dynamic, like, and why did that happen across the board?
Yeah, it's on the surface, it is perplexing and a little confusing because, let's take a step back, loyalty programs, not counting retail, because retail is its own animal, but like airline, hotel, banks, travel loyalty, as we know it, was kind of in it back in like the late 70s, early 80s. And since then, from then until COVID, is predicated on people knowing the price, right? So you save up your points and miles to go on a flight. So in the last, call it 5 years pre-COVID, the cost from North America to Europe, round trip economy, was 60,000 miles. That was fixed on Delta, United, American. Didn't matter who you're flying, that was the cost, right? Or let's pick some random hotel like the St. Regis in New York City. That was capped at 50,000 Marriott points, for example, right? Again, a fixed price for that stay. Ultimately, the airlines and hotels didn't really have an option or a choice to move from static to dynamic because COVID, as we all know, they were struggling massively. They're all basically on the verge of bankruptcy, and that's not hyperbole, that's a fact. Like, they were all about to declare bankruptcy. Obviously, the government stepped in, and a variety of other like players came in to help inject cash, but they still had to help themselves. And so they had to leverage their only valuable asset. And funnily enough, for airlines and hotels, that's not properties and it's not airplanes because those are already levered to the hilt. So they can't leverage them anymore. The only thing that they could leverage and can leverage is their loyalty programs. So the loyalty programs for, this is especially for airlines, hotels less so, but you get the point. They're actually worth more than the companies themselves. And so you can think of an airline as a central bank that prints their own currency, points and miles, right? That happens to operate 10 cans flying around the air at a loss because about 4/3 of the profit come from the loyalty programs. That means they lose 1/3 of the profit on the actual flying bit.
Wow, that's wild because it makes a lot of sense. It's just something I hadn't really thought about before. And it seems to me sort of like I've heard this. I don't know if it's true. When you go to the movie theater, supposedly, right, it's not the actual movie tickets that keep them running. It's the popcorn and the soda. And so basically, it's the same type of analogy.
Well, 100%. That is literally it. And so the only valuable asset they had were their loyalty program. So how did they leverage that? Well, they, as I said, they act as mini central banks. They control their own currency. So like American Airlines miles or Marriott points or whatever, the list goes on. Each one has their own currency. They sold a bunch, as in they printed currency like a central bank. So they sold billions of dollars of their currency to their partners, mostly the financial institutions like Amex and Chase and Capital One, so on and so forth. They bought this currency for a steep discount because they could, right? Makes sense for the banks to stockpile on this because they then go ahead and reissue those points and miles to their customers when they get a new credit card that's co-branded from their partnership where they transfer from Amex points to their partner. And what happens when you flood a market with a whole bunch of currency? You get hyperinflation. Take a look at Argentina currently, right? Or if you want historical context, in Zimbabwe back in the day, right? Hyperinflation, not very good. For the airlines and hotels, though, is not necessarily the end of the world because it's a vacuum, right? And so they can just keep changing the price. It ultimately doesn't matter if it costs 1 mile or 10 billion miles to go on a flight. It's irrelevant to them, right?
And is that what you mean with elite, with excess of elite status?
No, elite status is a separate issue. But really,
okay. I'm trying to connect the ideas. Okay.
No, this is simply just loyalty points as a whole. So we're talking airline miles and hotel points and bank points ultimately by proxy of that because they all transfer. And so what they did as a result of flooding the market with all this currency, they couldn't keep the pricing the same. They couldn't keep static pricing because that would mean that all availability would disappear and everything become useless, and also they would be losing a lot of money, right? So instead of changing the pricing, they said, okay, we've put in way too many points and miles. Let's just get rid of pricing entirely. So they just scrapped it all. they threw it out. And so that's why airlines and hotels shifted towards dynamic pricing, right? And that's how that came about. While they were doing this, to tie into your question, America, they also, to keep their best customers loyal, they gave extended loyalty status to their current members as well as new ones to try and pull people in to extract what little cash out of them they could during the, you know, year and a half that nobody was traveling. This also had massive knock-on effects, but you can think of it as, again, too many people's status as well. So it was, they did both. They didn't have to do that, but again, it's related.
Yeah. And I always have these movie analogies like I just did, but it reminds me of The Incredibles, where he says, when everyone's special, then no one is. And so this is a way of basically maintaining being special.
Yes, you're exactly right. So everybody was special and therefore nobody was special. And so you had the top of the top elites. We're talking like the private invite ones and like, you know, the creme la creme of the Delta Diamonds and the American, you know, executive platinums of the worlds, who were complaining that their status was worthless because everyone else had it too. And they spent, you know, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year flying these airlines and money at the hotels. And they're like, why does everybody get this? And so Delta, let's take them as an example, because they, you know, came up with the news back in October and they really were pummeled in the media, and rightfully so for this. They along with all these players, changed the goalposts, right? They say, if you do X, Y, Z, you will earn this benefit and this status and you get these perks and all these other things, but then they keep changing it. And since COVID, they've had to change that a lot because ultimately none of them were able to do the math properly to figure out what the ramifications of issuing all these points and miles, of issuing all this elite status, of issuing all these new credit card partnerships. Like, they couldn't figure out what was going to happen. So they've unfortunately had to like retroactively look back and go, oh, okay, you know, that didn't work. We're still losing money. Let's change the rules again. And if you tell people what the rules are and then you keep changing them, nobody's going to believe you, right? They're going to, right? They're going to leave. And so that's what happened with Delta. Everyone got really, really angry. It's Delta promised them one thing, reneged, told them something else, changed it again. And as a result, everybody got angry. The only people that weren't angry were the top like 1% of elite status people, because they're like, okay, now I'm special again. But everyone
kind
else.
Of like the tax brackets. But okay, so I get now, you know, how your finance background coming into your passion of travel makes a lot of sense for the creation of Odin. And in some ways, this exact perfect moment for you was created. How does Odin help solve this problem then?
Yes, because I'm thinking you're special with Odin. It could be because you provide a customer experience, services, but how do you turn out to be special with this kind of tech and services? I'm also curious.
Yeah, so we don't make anyone special. We don't give out loyalty status or anything like that. We can help you become special with the airlines and hotels if people want. But the main thing that we do is we provide full transparency in pricing across loyalty and traditional cash. So what I mean by that is we have pricing for every major hotel program, every major airline loyalty program. So that'll be miles, cash, obviously. Points as cash. So this is when you redeem your bank points for cash. You're not transferring them anywhere. You're just redeeming them within the portal, like the Capital One travel portal, for example. And then the transferable rate. So that's when you transfer your bank points or any other transferable program into the local currency, be it like AA miles or Marriott points that you're trying to book with. We then tell the end user, because we don't distribute directly really to customers. We partner with financial institutions, fintechs, neobanks, travel techs, to provide this offering. We then tell the end user what the optimal checkout method is, right? Are you going to get better value from using your miles, your points, your cash, transfer, so on and so forth? And so by doing so, we are putting the power back in the hands of the consumer, right? Because right now, everything is completely opaque. Nobody knows how much things cost. And it's a real nightmare. So by doing so, the end user now is able to optimally redeem for whatever they're trying to do. And this allows them to, one, save thousands of dollars a year, right? As well as potentially take free trips again, which was basically broken post-COVID as a result. And then allows them to focus on the fun part, which is enjoying their travel, right? That's what we're trying to get them to as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. Does that answer your question?
It does. So essentially you are a card curator, but for the dynamic world.
Yes, that is exactly it. So we're focusing on the redemption side. Mm-hmm. Because at this point in time, earning points and miles is relatively simple. Like you fly on an airline, you stay at a hotel, you spend on your card, or you get a new card and get a sign-up bonus. So we haven't focused on that. One area that we are going to be adding in the future with Odin is the ability to help redeem or earn status. So this is tying into the helping people become special. We don't have our own status thing. We don't give people status, but airlines and hotels in a post-COVID world are actually now moving towards earning status in a very similar way to how you earn points and miles and from before. So you can actually spend on credit cards these days, and your credit card spend will help you earn elite status with airlines and hotels. So theoretically, you can earn top status with airlines and hotels with never setting foot on an airplane or putting your head on a hotel pillow. And so in this environment, points, miles, status, credit cards, they're all tied together. They're the same thing, right? They're no longer separate. And so by us tackling one, we end up tackling everything ultimately.
That makes a lot of sense. Is the end user privy to this? Like your customer is the partners, correct? So how do I, as the end user, get to take advantage of this myriad of options, but have it simplified for me? Like if I'm belonging to, do I have to belong to a wide variety of loyalty programs, or you make it a one-stop shop in some sense?
So we currently have a couple of partners. The one that most people on this would know is Bilt. So we're live in Bilt. So if you have a Bilt credit card, you actually don't even need a Bilt credit card to have the Bilt app. So anyone can download the Bilt app. Under the travel portal, hotels, that's us. So Bilt has three transfer partners. They have Hyatt, Marriott, and ISG. We power all that. That's our UI UX. We tell people the pricing for those hotels. And we not only give them the pricing for the days that they want, we have the full calendar view. So you can see the loyalty pricing out a full 12 months to make your bookings. And it's native with Bilt. So we help you transfer your Bilt points to the program to then check out, all that fun stuff. So anybody can use that totally free. Doesn't cost you any money to sign up for Bilt. And I believe currently you get 50 free searches per month, which is more than the average person needs. That is just for Bilt though. So that's only for Bilt points and Bilt partners. We of course support everyone. So as we expand our partnerships with various partners, you'll be able to access that. We do have a small consumer facing end distributed through our affiliate partners. So users, if you wanted to, can literally go to aways.com. You'll see it via our Odin site. They can sign up and check it out, and that will give you the full suite of offerings. So that has the Amexes, the Chases, the Capital Ones of the world, that has all their partners for all the hotels. And I've been talking about airlines. Airlines are not publicly available yet. They will be in the next 2 to 3 weeks, give or take. So very, very soon. But that is the main way that people can access this free would be via Bilt.
So it's sort of like an OTA for points.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Like I go in, I look what I'm looking for, and then you say this is going to be the most convenient option for you. All right, that's where I'm booking.
How do you keep your users informed about this kind of OTA loyalty programs that you have available? So for example, I'm thinking of myself, and Yes, I went to a hotel. I bought tickets in a specific airline, but how do I take the time to know that I have benefits out there? I'm kind of lazy, so I don't check my emails. I don't check with the airline directly. Hey, what are my benefits? I just certainly know, but how do you keep them informed? Is that an issue? Is that something that is also like changing in the industry?
Great question. And yes, it definitely is. So right now, what we say on top and up to date on is any new transfer partners, transfer rules, transfer ratios, transfer bonuses, all this fun stuff, we automatically feed it. So as a user of our Aways platform, via built or directly, right? This auto updates for you. You don't need to worry about it. There's no email going out. It's just, goes in there automatically. So the math, the algorithm that we use to determine all of this, which is based on machine learning, auto updates, right? Not a problem. Now, in terms of if you as an individual are missing out on certain benefits or perks, or could get this, you know, credit card to give you early boarding or free checked bags, all that, we don't currently do that. That is, you know, reminiscent of our card curator days. We will be adding in that technology in the future, along with user account syncing. So right now, everything is currently manual, where the user just inputs the rough balances. Where we don't need full details of like you have 100 to 1,000 and 59, you know, miles or whatever. You just put in 100,000. So that's all we ask for right now is a quick manual entry because it makes the onboarding 30 seconds for users to input their balances. In the coming months, so probably March, maybe April, we'll have auto syncing so that you can log in one time with your, you know, Delta SkyMiles account, and then we'll auto update if you have flight certificates. You know, people never use those. Those always expire worthless, right? And those are hundreds, if not thousands of dollars sometimes. Free night credits, like if you get it from a credit card or something from that end, or status. So as I said, our algorithm is machine learning based. We tell you, the user, what the optimal redemption is. Is it cash? Is it points? Is it miles? Let's take two examples, right? At the end of the year, say the flight that you're trying to take is, you know, $2,000, but it only costs 50,000 miles. Right? That's a really good deal. You would want to use the miles, and we would tell you to use the miles. But say you are just short of status to go from, you know, top to top status. What do you as an individual value that difference? I could very easily make the case that it is worth a lot more than $2,000. Mm-hmm. Or you would say the difference, like call it $1,500 between the two.
So right now is the best time to buy that flat screen TV I was planning on buying anyway, because it's going to bump my status.
Exactly. And so we would be able to make that decision for you and tell you that actually this is the optimal redemption. So we can't do that yet, obviously, because we haven't turned on the loyalty account syncing, nor have we turned on the status earning. But as you can see where we're going with this, we would be able to optimize that for you.
And that would include, or the plan there is to also include alerts, or is this still me having to seek?
So we would include alerts. So right now, the alerts that we have in place notify you when what you're looking for becomes available. So as I said, hotels is the part of the slide alert. Right now, when we launch flights, we'll do that too. But if you're trying to book something and it's not available, you can set an alert to notify you when it does become available. So you will get an email or a push notification saying, hey, what you're looking for, you can now book. So we would do that as well. Say, for example, your flight certificates are expiring, or you know, you're about to miss status for the year because, you know, the year ends on December 31st, or sometimes it's like February 29th. They're all weird. They all have different dates. So we would keep track of that for you. Or if you need to hit it, spend extra dollars, as you said, $1,500 on that flat screen to give you that next, whatever that is, we'll be able to keep track of that for you.
Well, so let's talk a little bit about the partner side. We've talked, I think, a lot to the users, right? And what are the partnerships in this case, you know, the hotels, the airlines, what do they think about this in terms of spending currency, currency that they get to make up anyway, but are they on board in the sense of what's good in the industry is good for me? in terms of, you know, creating this joint loyalty and then, you know, working through these deals, or what's in it for them?
So loyalty programs from their inception were designed to cost money up front, right? You're giving away perks and benefits to people in the hopes that they stick with you, become loyal, so that you can make money long term, right? The idea of a loyalty program is to increase the customer lifetime value, right? That's the premise of loyalty programs. So when I get asked this question about, well, won't airlines, hotels, or banks, the people that are issuing this loyalty, be mad that people are now spending, costing them more money? The response is, well, that's what they're designed to do. Like that's the entire premise of a loyalty program. Is it supposed to cost them money, right? If it didn't cost them money, then that would mean that it's not really working in the first place, right? And so ultimately, the reception internally has been very, very positive, because in a post-COVID world, redemptions are down, right? People are no longer redeeming anywhere near as many points and miles, ultimately because they don't know how much things cost, right? That is a direct correlation and causation of that. Well, what happens when people are redeeming less? Yes, that saves on your costs, great. Like, sure, everyone should be happy about that, but take a second to think what that means long-term.
They're traveling less.
They're less loyal. They're not spending as much with you. So you're actually making less money, right? So it's not a good thing for them. And they're aware of this. They're very much aware of this. They're very much afraid of this. So what we do is we help increase the redemption rates, right? So that we can kick off that flywheel effect of loyalty, right? As users are spending their points and miles, right? They get that free trip or subsidized or whatever. They're happy. Guess what they're going to do? They're going to want another one. Well, how are they going to get another one? Well, they're going to spend on their card, or they're going to spend with your airline or with your hotel to get more points and miles, and then go do it again. And as you can see, it starts to build on itself. And so that's all we're doing, is we're helping the loyalty programs that exist today operate as they were originally intended to do.
Mm-hmm. You're helping them fix their decision to go dynamic.
Yes, that's exactly what we're doing.
Like, oh, we made a mess in the kitchen. Odin! I love it. But, you know, so JT, we're actually here at the final few minutes of our show, if you can believe it or not. I'd like to bring it back to you as an individual, maybe sort of your words of wisdom through this wild time going from card curator to Odin. You know, a lot has happened for you in the last 6 years-ish. So what might you do or say to counsel anyone who finds themselves in a similar situation of having to do, you know, be so agile and move so quickly? What have you learned from this?
Definitely respond to the market, right? We did not cause loyalty programs to shift. That was completely outside of our control. We could have continued to ride Card Curator to the bitter end. That's not something that we decided to do, but we could have, because the shift in loyalty programs from static to dynamic was not overnight. This was a gradual change day by day that was happening, still happening over the course of years. So we saw the leading indicators for this, and we made the hard decision to shut down Card Curator then and there and start Odin to build on the solution. And I'm so glad that we made that decision. We could have made it maybe a couple months earlier, but like, we made it pretty early on. And as a result, we're now doing better than we ever were and have something that is very applicable to this time and space, whereas Card Curator would have been relegated to the dustbin of history, right? It's not relevant. Static pricing, it's completely useless, basically. So it was completely outside of our control. We couldn't do anything except for move with it, right? Don't fight the tide. Move with it and make that decision as soon as possible, because it's going to be better for you in the long run, is all I can say.
In terms of company culture, did you make a switch when you had your former company and this one? Did you make like modifications of the way that you wanted to communicate with your teams or that kind of culture? There were any changes?
Yeah, I mean, the team changed drastically. So Odin is a new legal entity, completely separate company from Card Curator. And Card Curator was B2C. So we had a marketing team and PR and all that. Odin does not. We sell, as we all established, like into large enterprises and small, medium businesses, right? So we don't have a marketing team, we have a sales team. And when we lose, you know, half your team, it does completely shift the culture. So the way that we look at things now is not about like short term, like increases percentage month over month in like customers and, you know, app store metrics and all that stuff. What we're looking for is building long-term partnerships and relationships with these enterprise clients, because the sales cycle is not instantaneous. It can take 6 months, a year, longer, right? And so you can't just benchmark it on, oh, we've now converted 10,000 users, because it will go from, oh, we're exchanging emails to, wow, we just got access to 10 million cardholders. Like it's just completely different. So in terms of communication, one, culture, patience. we're a lot more patient now. You have to recalibrate expectations. You have to recalibrate how you are thinking and communicating to each other, because everything's just different. So we had to learn a lot in that process.
Wow. Thank you so much, UT, for spending your time with us today. I personally learned a lot today. I found today's show to be super enlightening over the industry as a whole, loyalty programs as a whole. You were able to explain this very, very easily. And I just want to thank you again. And of course, wish you and Odin and your aways.com all the success in the world. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you. Stick around for just a minute as we go off air. But before we do, we'd like to share with our audience what we've got coming up tomorrow.
Yes. Tomorrow, we're going to have a conversation with Fran Kauslarik. We will know tomorrow. Co-founder at the company Trinio. The topic is going to be about new hotel tech enabling incredible experiences. How can hotels offer their guests incredible travel experiences and activities? Tomorrow at 8 a.m.
Right? Not our usual 10 o'clock airtime. Fran is located over in Europe, so we're going a little earlier. All right. So see you tomorrow, everyone, and have a great rest of your day. Thanks again, JT. Bye.
Check out past episodes, transcripts, blogs, and more on our website, dojo.nearsoft.com.